to the Beer Healer Interviews. I am your host, Chris Lukianenko, and I scour this big brand land of ours, looking under fermenters and behind mash tuns to find the best beer stories to share with you. The Beer Healer Interviews is now available on all major podcast services. If you like the show and want to help out, can I ask you to simply rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or your preferred podcast service? Just leave a few words and a rating and the podcast gods will do the rest. By doing this, you'll help others to discover the show more easily and hopefully get more people interested in this great industry that we call craft beer. Well, up until a few weeks ago, I knew nothing about today's guest and the brewery that they are building. But then a mad keen craft beer lover from the area sent me a message on Instagram. His name is Liam Adamaitis. And over the course of a week or two and a couple of visits to the venue, he sent me many messages and pictures. He was professing his love for this place called Dangerous Ales. He was so damn excited to tell me about it. I knew I just had to get their founder, Damien Martin. No, not the ex-Australian cricketer, but a brewer and co-founder, onto the mic for a chat. Dangerous Ales is on the south coast of New South Wales, closer to Canberra than Sydney, to be honest, and according to their biggest fan, they are bloody amazing and have a great story to tell. So enough of the bullshit intro. Let's get into this. Welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews, Damien Martin.
G'day, mate. How you doing?
Good to have you on board. And I just got to say thanks to Liam for putting me onto you. He was so passionate about telling me all about what you were doing and that he'd been to visit you and the food was great and this and that and the other thing. He literally forced me into contacting you. And when I did, I was like, this is great. This is going to be a good one. So how good is the craft beer scene?
Oh, yeah, he's awesome. And the craft scene's awesome too. I only met Liam when he came into the venue, but he's our biggest fan and he's a lovely bloke. So,
he's pretty keen.
So
where do we start with this? How about Milton, which is south coast New South Wales? I've never visited there myself, but I've seen it on the map. Is that your old hometown or something?
Yeah, sunny south coast. So I grew up on the south coast in Milton, or Ulladulla Mollymook area. And we moved away, went travelling, and we've moved back and set up a business here essentially. So set up a brewery and took over an old hotel and repurposed it and made it our tap room essentially.
Nice. Because this is a bit of a family thing, if I'm right, am I?
Yeah, 100% family owned and run business. My business partner is my father-in-law. So, it's all good. I started, like most, I guess, a lot of startup breweries at the moment. I started home brewing, and he was my number one fan at the time because he got as much free beer as he wanted.
Nice.
Yeah, and then I got married in 2017, and I wanted to make, because I've been a chef for 20 plus years. So I wanted to do all the food and make all the beer. So that's where our journey started.
Yeah, cool. Well, there's two directions I want to go in here. You mentioned chef, so let's go with the chef. You were a pro from what I believed. Yeah. And again, a little tidbit from Liam. He told me that you worked with Gordon Ramsay. Where did you work with Gordon?
So I lived in London for a year working at a Gordon Ramsay restaurant. I worked for a guy called Jason Atherton, but Ramsay would come in every Friday, Saturday nights and yell and scream at everyone. And
so that literally he is that character that he plays on screen, is he?
100%, yeah. Also, like at the same time, they have chef's experience tables. So there's like tables of 20 in the actual kitchen having dinner. So it's all theatre. It's a lot of theatre, but he's got to live up to it, which is
fair enough. Yeah. Did you ever hang out with him and have a beer or anything like that?
No, it was it's not that kind of relationship for sure. But we'd start work at 6 o'clock in the morning and finish at 1 o'clock in the morning. It'd be 18-19 hour days.
Seriously?
Yeah, big time.
I got a couple of mates who are chefs, and you know, from the age of 18, I never saw them again because it's either long hours or it's the split shifts, and it's a tough gig, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why it's huge on your family, huge on like your social life. The cooking side of it, I think that's why a lot of people are going away from wanting to cook. Sort of why there's a big skill shortage in the actual area as well of cooking, because the money's not great and the hours aren't great. So it's like a double-ended sword that I think we're all like heading towards, everyone wants to go out for dinner, but not anyone wants to cook dinner. So it's a bit of a struggle. Yeah.
Yeah. I get that. Then you throw a family in there and it's pretty tough. It's bloody tough. Well, what about your other pro hobby? Your other pro career as a bloody bodyboarder. How do you fit in living in London, trying to be a pro bodyboarder? Or these are at different times of your life?
Yeah, very different times of my life. So in my early 20s, I just did a lot of cooking and chased that for a while. And I lived in London, France, cooking. And then after about 4 or 5 years overseas, I moved back and fell back in love with the South Coast. And what I did growing up was a lot of bodyboarding. And then living on the coast, you get pretty good at that kind of stuff. You get to go surfing every day. You wag school. spent a lot of time in the ocean. And then was fortunate enough to get paid to go and do it. So people.
Is there decent money in bodyboarding, or is it sort of more with the surfers?
Oh, there's definitely better money in surfing. Bodyboarding's definitely for the love of it. But, like, you can live and you can travel for free, so it's not too bad.
And you're saying you had some sponsors, did you, to help you live?
Yeah, I had a couple of companies that would help me pay for trips, and you drop of a hat, the good swell would be going to Tahiti, just jump on a flight the next morning. It'd be pretty hard to do this day and age, but everything's going on. But, I guess I was really lucky the timing that it happened.
Wondering whether maybe the Dave Dangerous Hours could be the new Bolter, similar background to those guys. You'd be a millionaire before you know.
Yeah. Sell out. So I don't know if that's craft beer anymore, is it? I guess so. I don't know. You never know.
You could only dream. You could only dream.
That's it.
So you're saying that you set up in an old pub in Milton. Was that a pub that had a little bit of history? Because I've seen the photos of it from the outside. It looks like a pretty nice sort of Art Deco-y kind of sort of
building. Yeah. So the pub's 150 years old. It used to be called the Commercial Hotel, and it was just sort of was tired. No work had been done to it for 40 years. And we got the opportunity to take it over, do a big reno, put a new kitchen in, putting a huge big deck on, brand new beer garden, and freshen up the beer lines and put a microbrewery in the three-door garage out the back. So
nice.
That's what we've been doing for the last 2 years,
Where did the love of brewing come from? Has it always been a party back in the day when you were travelling around in Europe and stuff? Or
I definitely went to Oktoberfest a few times. It wasn't generally for the beer. It was generally for the party. But with cooking, I fell in love with fermentation. So we were making a lot of vinegars, and say like Pete would make a peach vinegar or shiso vinegar or like whatever fruit you could imagine. And then we used to just ferment it with salt, but then we learned that there's some tricks out there. We started fermenting with Saison's yeast in the kitchen and doing stuff like that. And then it was a natural progression. I was working in a winery in Western Australia for a couple of years. One record Vass Felix, and I got to do a bit of stuff like looking through barrel halls and watching harvest and stuff like that, and I sort of really fell in love with the fermentation, and then it was sort of just a natural progression. I was really interested in wine at the time, but it takes too long to make wine.
wait
a couple of years where you can make a beer and you can be drinking it in 2.5 weeks. So that's where the love came from, is based from cooking, and we're trying to incorporate it in our day-to-day life, really. So
yeah, cool. Oh, nice. And you mentioned the little system you've got out in the three-car garage. I believe it's a 500-litre Braumeister, is that right?
Yeah, so we're brewing on a 500-litre Braumeister at the moment. We got 6-hec uni tanks, 1 12-hec uni tank and a 20-hec uni tank at the moment. Which is about to be decommissioned in about 4 or 5 weeks, and we've just purchased a new kit from China. Going to a 20-hec vessel, 4-vessel system with 9 40-hec fermenters and a 20-hec. So
in the same footprint.
No, we're about to knock the old shed down and put a new shed in as well. So
oh, nice. Oh, that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah,
I wanted to quickly ask about the Braumeister, if I could, because I've actually got a 20 litre myself.
Yeah.
Is it pretty much the same idea, except you're going to have a little bit of help when you're lifting up, you know, you lift up the what's the thing that you put in the middle of it to keep all the grain?
I keep six blokes in the brewery for the pig. It's got a crane on it and you lift it up. Vice barge the same, but it's essentially exactly the same, but we get about 650 litres out of a batch where you get 22 litres if you're lucky.
And so what about with, you know, taking the recipes from that to this new system? Is there a bit of work for you to mess around in doing that, do you think?
Yeah, definitely. It's taken us probably, we're just sort of landing now where we're happy with a lot of beers. I guess this was always the plan. We bought a 200 litre system and didn't even use it. And then we bought the 200 litre Braumeister, didn't use it. We bought a 500 litre Braumeister.
Yep.
The plan was to expand and use the 500 litre one as experiment, like to make sure that we're happy with what we're doing before we get bigger again, before we get a lot of beer out in the world. So we've been playing with a lot of different ale strains for hazies and a lot of different lager strains to make sure we land where we want to be, because in the new brew house we've got prop tanks and we want to sort of keep it to one or two strains so that we've got house strains that always churning through.
Yeah, cool. I mean, for those that don't know about brewing with the Braumeister, it's an all-in-one brew kit effectively, so you don't have the different vessels to move wort through to and things like that. What do you think's been the biggest challenge in trying to, you know, convert your recipes from that all-in-one to the multi-vessel system?
It won't change that much. It's more about liquid heat transfer, so it's going to be hotter for longer. So IBUs and losing essential oils will be the biggest player in it. I have got some mates with some 20 hex systems which I have brewed on before. So knowing what our beer does on that system, it's just more about dialing the IBUs back, essentially.
Yeah, but okay.
Heading more towards later additions, more Whirlpool additions, stuff like that.
Why did you go the Braumeister as the first route? Was it more just about a space saving thing? You just had to get something to help you out, or?
Yeah, well, I was price effective. To actually get into the game, starting commercial breweries, not you'd have deep pockets. So, we bought it secondhand off a company called Southern Highlands Brewing. So, and it's actually going to another company called Browley Brewing. So it's going to live on and help someone start up another brewery and, get going on the sunny south coast again. So we bought it for financial point of view and for the footprint it takes up.
It's
for what it is, it's fantastic. It makes great beer and it is, like, really good at the sides. If you see in the shed, it's more about packing fermenters in than the kit we wanted to brew the actual wort with. So
I went to this place in Orlando one time and they had one in the corner of the bar, like literally just this temporary fence around it. There was the whole Braumeister and it was just, oh, what's this? Is a microbrewery. Oh, yeah, there's our brew kit over there. I was like, shit, you know, it's the size of a desk or whatever sort of thing.
Yeah, you can wheel it around and, like, we get East Coast. We do a couple of specialty runs with, like, the guys from East Coast and we can just wheel it out of the way so they can fit their Cody machine actually in the brewery. So it's pretty handy for that, but for volume, we do double and trip, like doubling sort of batches over 2 days to fill the 20 hectare up. It's just, they're long days to make volume of beer. Yeah. So, yeah.
And did it hold you back in terms of any of the beers that you wanted to brew on it at all?
No.
That's cool.
Nah, not at all, really. They can make, because they are electric and you can fully, as you know, I don't know if you, I guess talking to you, you might understand where you can fully do traditional step mashes the whole way. Like the temperature control on them is fantastic.
It's brilliant, I reckon. Yeah,
yeah, they've got a lot of control, and you can really hit your numbers with it. We get fantastic extraction. Where I know from some other guys who I've brewed with and know in the brewing world who have direct fire stuff, and they really struggle with hitting their numbers and keeping the mash at the right temp and stuff like that. So. Yeah, it's really good for what it is, and I could,
yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm a shit-ass home brewer anyway, but
oh, sure, come on.
I'm shit. I just, I I don't have an attention to detail, and the patience is my issue. But I've probably produced the best beers that I've ever drunk of my own off the Braumeister, just purely because it gives you that little bit of extra control with those things like the step mashes and all those sorts of things. And I think also at about the same time I got that, I started to listen to people a little bit more instead of thinking, oh, I don't know, boats, I can do this shit, no worries.
So. Yeah. Well, I'm always been a big believer if you can make a cake, you can brew beer. So.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's all about hitting your numbers. So if you want to make a nice sponge cake, you got to make sure the prep works in it, your oven temperature's right.
Yes, chef. Sorry to interrupt. Just a couple of things you can do if you want to help spread this craft beer gospel. First up, Apple Podcasts. If you've got it on your phone, find the Beer Healer interviews. Scroll all the way down to the bottom, rate, review, subscribe. That's the best thing you can do to help me out. Other than that, whatever podcast player you listen to this on, follow me or subscribe to me on that one. And then also find me on Instagram and follow me there. Thanks for your help. So tell us about the range of beers that you've pulled together for Dangerous Ales.
Oh, we do a lot of seasonal stuff. We make every quarter we'll bring out a new IPA. We make quarterly like sours, heavily fruited. Today we just canned a sour IPA, which we're really, really happy with where it's landed.
Cool.
Yeah. We do mixed fermentation, saisons, and with like oak fermented saisons essentially, which we're about to bottle a heap coming up really soon.
Yep.
We've also got some mixed fermentation like darker beers, our oatmeal stouts in a couple of oak barrels at the moment with a couple of 100 kilos of cherries. Like New Zealand sort of style pilsners, like crispy, we call them crispy boys, but crispy like boys, hot, dry hop lagers. We make a lot of those. And we do a couple of traditional sort of ones, like commercial style.
You must be working that fucking Braumeister just off its head.
Right. Yeah, we clog it.
Bloody oath.
I don't know. I was just going to say we've got about 10 or 12 beers in cans at the moment, and we've got 14 taps at the brewery, and we have two bright tanks on the bar, 200-litre bright tanks that we make like a sour, and we'll heavily fruit in the actual bright. So, we'll do second fermentation actually in the bright tanks and then cold crash them with a couple of 100 kilos in each one and do the same. So we'll do a single batch of beer and we'll split it off into two and split the fruit, so make them completely different beers. So we run that as well. So we have 16 different beers on.
I'm starting to understand why Liam has a bit of a brewery crush on you.
He's going to move over from Canberra and work for us. He doesn't know it yet, but he is.
So yeah. What's your most popular style at the tap house?
Oh, the lagers and pale ale. So because we are a hotel or a pub, we get a lot of patrons that want to drink XPAs, pale ales, and lagers.
Yep.
They're essentially our core range. We sell a ridiculous amount of that through kegs. And then all our specialties, all the craft beer stuff is sort of goes in a package for distribution. So, and that's what they're sort of, we sort of play to two different markets, I guess. That's our business model at the moment is, all the crafty stuff goes into cans for craft drinkers, and then the guys who come to the venue just want a clean, easy drinking English sort of style pale ale.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah,
thank you.
Cool. You've thought about this shit, haven't you? Yeah, it's great.
Well, that's just through trial and error too. Like we put a 9% oatmeal stout on or a 10% Nipah on and just on tap, and people aren't heaps interested. I think people come to the venue and they want to have four or five or six beers. They don't want to have one and not be able to get home. So we found that the lagers and the pale ales that are around 5% is what we move.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was having a chat with DJ from Mountain Culture recently. We're sort of talking about the difference in, what you put on and what you put into cans and that sort of thing. And he's actually then has seen the local drinkers, which he thought were going to be just all about lager or whatever, starting to get really adventurous now and starting to move through the beers into the sort of more pointy end. So you might see that at some stage too.
Yeah, well, definitely. Like I guess last week, alone, we have like a Aussie IPA on tap at the moment. It's all Australian malt and hops.
Is that the one you sent down to me?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Aussie IPA. Oh, yeah, so that's it. You go. So that's our quarterly IPA at the moment, and we've got one more batch of that coming out, and then we'll move on to something else. But that was last week was our highest selling beer, and that's 6%. Nice. Pretty juicy IPA, which
is, I thought it was great.
It's a good beer. It's easy drinking, and it's good for what it is. It's pretty what's the word? I guess it's when you've got set parameters and you have to make a beer within that kind of stuff. It sort of makes it a bit harder for guys like us to make sure you work in those parameters to keep the beer what you could do with any other hop that comes from any place in the world. So yeah, it's cool. Yeah. It's good to do. It makes it interesting. Yeah.
It's good. So you are only small, and I was having a chat with Matt from Catchment Brewing last week, and we're talking about the idea of, you know, looking after your locals and all that sort of thing. Cause I sort of said to him, I'd never tried his beer or heard of his brewery really. And I guess it's a little bit similar for you. You are very small, but is looking after the locals and obviously that tap house your absolute priority, as opposed to maybe trying to get some ranging in Dan's and all those sorts of things at this stage?
Our tap sales are definitely our bread and butter. And you've got to keep the locals happy. Like in summer, obviously we are a coastal town, so we have this huge influx in summer, and our production goes up like 500%. But those people are going to come in no matter what. But if you don't do something for the locals in the quieter months, like look after them with food or make sure you're making beer that they're happy to drink, because they just – what are you going to do when those people aren't around in summer and get you through the quiet months? Like, I guess it's a perfect example is like you in Tassie, you guys just had Dark Mofo and would bring a giant economy boost to just a Tassie itself to get through those colder months. I think it's a fantastic idea. And I see that because my mate who works and lives down there, when he goes through to do it, and I'm thinking, why don't we have a winter surf festival in a surf town like that to drive that same kind of thing? It's what we're trying to working towards now as a business. So
the whole town just comes alive down here for Dark Mofo. Even though this year there was some problems with trying to get Sydney siders and Melbourne folk down this way, Hobart people just came out in droves. I mean, I think I was out three nights this weekend, and I'm married with two kids and don't go out much, there would have been everybody along those lines. It's just such a great event. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. I heard there was some weird stuff with no dancing and people getting upset about that. This is some of the feedback I heard about it.
Yeah, I didn't really go to the nightclub type section of it. I was more sort of, you know, during the pre-midnight hours is where I got around it.
The dad section.
That's exactly right.
Beautiful.
So you're talking before about Crispy Boy, and if people haven't been to your website and you're from the 80s, a kid of the 80s like I was, you'll recognise something I think is about as 80s as you can get. In your merch shop, you can get a Terry Telling bucket hat with a logo that is a tribute to Frosty Boy soft serve ice cream on it.
Why?
Is it for the Crispy Boy?
Same thing growing up, being a little surf rat. We wore Terry Telling hats and it's just taking it back to the past. And I love it. And it's aimed at guys like myself and you. And it's funny that I've had a couple of conversations with people, and that is one of the highest talking points about. We did a lot of different merch and people were like stoked with it, but they always go back to the Terry Telling hat. They love it.
It's really cool.
We sold out of them real quick. People want it.
And I was researching this week, I knew the logo and I knew it was from ice cream, but I couldn't remember whether it was like Mr. Whippy or Peter's or Paul's or whatever. And eventually I found Frosty Boy. I noticed now on their website the Frosty Boy logo is nothing like it. So it literally is the 80s logo that you're using, isn't it?
100%. I was a bit nervous about it. Yeah, exactly. I was a bit nervous about using it, like for obvious reasons, but the fact that they've updated it and it's changed, I'm sure the older picture, it's not trademarked, hopefully.
And is it your venue that's got them on the toilet doors as well?
Yes.
Have you seen a video of that this last week or someone? There was a woman showing them on a video this week somewhere I've seen. I don't know if that was yours or
that's us. Yeah, so my cousin runs a art studio called Bare Naked Studios. So she does all the artwork on our cans, the Crispy Boy.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, all that stuff like is from her. She draws it. We have another lady, Eliza, who digitalizes everything and colors it in. Yep. So it's cool.
Oh, so what she's drawing pen and paper, all this stuff, is she?
Yeah, yeah. So it's all pen and paper, or pencil, and then, old school ads. It's hectic. And it takes 4 or 5 times, and we get there in the end, but it's cool. It's a cool process.
How cool is there's even a, you know, further extension of the whole family vibe with what you're doing?
I'm deep in the family vibe. So we have a little at the hotel, we have like a coffee window at the front, and it's called Sourbro. We make our own sourdough bread and sell it out the window. And my cousin has a coffee roaster called Left, Right and the Bird, and we buy his coffee and use that out the window, Australian organic coffee. And then my father-in-law, my wife runs the back of house, pays all the bills.
How old are the kids? Are they ready to push a broom around yet?
Oh, they're ready to wash up. Yeah, that's one's 3 years old and one's one. So.
Yeah, not quite. Not quite.
Yeah, so they're ready to move out, but no, I'm joking. I'm joking. Yeah. Oh, and actually, we have one other person in Jack, my brother-in-law, actually works in the brew with me as well. So he's in charge of he runs a canning line and does a lot of cellar work. So nice. He's a glorified cleaner and box packer. Yeah, so.
that's nice. I'm sure he'd love hearing you say that. we mentioned earlier that you're an accomplished chef. Is all the food designed and cooked by you at the venue?
At the moment, yes.
Do you ever take a fucking break?
I haven't yet. We're not quite 2 years in, so I'm almost ready for a weekend. But so I cook Wednesday to Sunday, and then we brew. Or I take sometimes, depends on Wednesdays. I work in the kitchen on Thursday to Sunday, and then I brew Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday at the moment.
Okay.
But we're sort of struggling with staff. Like there's this huge skill shortage. We're trying to get through at the moment, just trying to put more guys on. But
being that you're an actual pub, getting food trucks in there just wouldn't have probably worked, would it?
Yeah, food trucks are cool. I feel like it's sort of, I don't know, I'm not trying to poo-poo on other breweries or anything like that, but I feel like it's done at every brewery too. So
yeah,
I wanted to make it different, and it'd be crazy for me not to use my cooking background to make it in heightened sort of version of the brewery experience as well, I guess. So because the food is... we think it's pretty good. We cook everything on like a big hibachi Argentinian style grill. We get a mix of people coming in who are just coming for the food, and then there's a big mix of people who just come for the beer as well. So it's this really happy medium at the moment. So we're really stoked how it's going.
It's interesting, as I just bring up my Instagram messages from Liam, and he told me, he even sent me pictures of the food. And he sent me a picture, which is something I don't think I've ever seen at a brewery in the past. I'm just trying to bring it up. He said, this is a picture of sashimi with a Basil Earl sauce thing with its Vienna lager in the background. Well, I don't see that at a brewery too often.
No, yeah, so we buy local whole yellowfin tuna or whole bluefin tuna. Because I've been cooking my whole life, we know how to deal with it and do the right things with it. So we have sashimi on the menu. We do wagyu rumps barbecued over like charcoal.
Nice.
Yeah, free range pork. Like all, we try to make it the full experience. And at the same time, we do the brewery kind of stuff. At the moment, we're doing like pizzas on Thursdays, and I make pizzas on Thursdays, and we hand shape them. We've got a big wood fire oven, and I had a big Italian fella teach us how to make proper pizzas. So
cool.
Yes,
that's awesome. Yeah. Was there an element of the fact that I'm a classically trained chef and I'm slightly a little bit of a control freak, so therefore I don't want other people serving food in my venue?
Yes. it's probably one of my downfalls. I guess it's controlling or like super anal about what goes on. It's classically trained old school French mentality as well. So
yep.
Time changes, but yeah.
That's all right. Do you feel like you've taken the lessons from food, you know, learning about flavor, combinations, textures, process, caring for the goods, And you've been able to take them and to apply them into your brewing as well?
Yeah, we have for sure. Like balancing sour, balancing our sour beer with fruited additions. The sour IPA we just brought out, which is like super balanced. Like we're in the process of going down the road of doing more food orientated beers, I guess, like incorporating stuff that maybe a lot of people don't know about as actual food ingredients as well. So I just didn't want to scare people off at the start and do like, I don't know, a shizo and yuzu or like, I don't know, something crazy at the start and get people scared of it. But we're definitely getting, now that we're sort of happy with where our numbers are, we'll definitely get more adventurous as we move forward. And I feel like that's what moving forward is what actual craft drinkers want too. They want 600 kilos of peaches in their 500 litres of beer. They want more fruit than actual beer, so which we're happy to do. We do crazy fruit additions at the moment. So
yep. Well, you need to live up to your namesake, don't you, and start really pushing the boundaries. That's what people are going to be expecting if they know nothing about you.
Yeah. So the name actually, growing up from bodyboarding, my mates used to call me Dangerous Damo, so that's the dangerous ales bit. So,
Were you just one of those blokes that would get out there in the water and just have a crack at anything?
Yeah, I enjoyed the larger side of the ocean, so I did a lot of that kind of stuff, yeah. I mean, we'd fly down to Tassie actually and surf shippies and stuff all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, nice. Yeah. I go down there quite often, got the shack down that way, so it's pretty nice.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a great part of the world. What's the biggest wave you ever surfed?
I've been to like Chopu, like Te Apu in Tahiti. Yep. I don't know, I've been to like Bonsai, like Pipeline in Hawaii. The Right in Western Australia. I moved to Western Australia to surf that wave. So that was like, I dragged my wife across the country and we lived there for 2 years so I could go surf one wave. I don't know if she knows that. It's the reason we moved there. I might have just thrown myself under the bus.
I'm not a surfer and so I don't really know a lot about the thing, but I have been to Pipeline at Hawaii on a day where it was apparently not really that big, but fuck me, there was no way I was going to be getting out in those frigging waves.
Yeah. Well, I guess you might be handicapped. Like, it might be hard for you guys to go surfing. It's hard to get motivated to go, definitely go anywhere near the water in Tassie.
It's absolutely freezing down this way. Miserable. Tonight as we speak, it's about 3 degrees outside, which is not cool.
Yeah. Mount Welly getting snowed on.
Yeah, bloody oath. Mm-hmm. You don't sound like a bloke who's going to let anything get in your way. So you seem like you're quite driven and you want to do things. You've obviously moved your wife to the other side of the country, and all that sort of thing. In the last sort of 2 years, what's been the biggest challenge in embarking on this whole sort of, life-changing career?
The biggest challenges are just the day-to-days, I guess. Like just stealing, like I guess – just going through staff and like running a business is the hardest part, I guess. Like I've never ran my own business, so it's always easier to be the employee and then to take everyone else's like weight on. Like I think that's, I found that the hardest because I am so driven. I'm happy to work 7 days a week, but
yep.
It's hard. That's the hardest part for running your own
probably
business.
Probably hard once the kids get a little bit older, trying to balance that as well when they need you a bit more than they do right now.
Yeah, well, we're just hitting that point now. So my 3-year-old, like, where's dad? Where's dad? So it's there now. So something needs to give a little bit. Yeah.
Has there been a moment in the last 2 years where you sort of sat back and thought, I'm pretty fucking happy with myself for doing this? Was there a real pleasing moment?
I think it's going to come in about September when we set up our new system. Mm-hmm. That is the top of the mountain for me, I think, once we set that up.
It's a lot more serious, doesn't it, than a larger version of a homebrew type system?
Yeah, exactly. I feel like we'll be rubbing shoulders with some bigger guys, so it's sort of cool. It's cool for us. It's a tiny little mum and dad business that hopefully can break through and make some volume. Yeah.
That's awesome. Are there any other breweries on the South Coast around you?
Yeah. So I'm really good mates with the guys at JB. They come down, Jervis Bay Brewing. So they come down and hang out and they come and borrowed my keg washer last week because it's broke down. The guys at Cubits brew some beer, just a little bit. It's a tiny amount that they sort of mainly keep in-house. Another guy opened another one up in Huskisson called Flaming Galah.
Oh, I've heard about that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he comes. He's come in a couple of times. I've went and seen him at his new – went and say congratulations. They just opened a new sort of venue probably about a month ago as well. So they're popping up. And like I said a bit earlier, the guys – some guys are opening a brewery in Browley, which is about an hour and a half south of us, who literally just purchase our equipment when it gets when the shed gets pulled down. So
I love it how you just sort of casually, just an hour and a half south. That's pretty much from top to bottom of Tassie.
Yeah, we're mainlanders, but you see. Yeah.
Now, I do like to do a very in-depth research when I have these things. Obviously, I read the Crafty Pint article, which was fantastic, that came out last week or the week before. And in that, something's just jumped out at me because it's a man after my own heart. And I read that you are into 90s hip hop. Who's your favorite rapper from the day?
Oh, I have like a lot of the like Wu-Tang Clan and stuff. Like I've been listening to a lot of that. Like Dre.
Yep. Is that booming in the venue? Like I think of like One Drop Broom with their reggae. Could you be for hip hop what they are for reggae?
We definitely are. Sometimes I have to watch what the guys play. We play a lot of hip hop for sure in the venue. Yeah, there's some lyrics that it's just like halfway through a song and I'm looking at the guys, looking at the playing the music, I'm just like chilling. Because like I said, there's some people who come in for the food and then there's some people who come for the beer. So a different demographic. So it's a bit of a balance. But at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, we're stoked to play a lot of 90s hip hop and a lot of punk as well. So
I can relate in two ways. Back in the day when I was about 20 or thereabouts, I was actually a wedding DJ, quite a famous wedding.
Really?
Not really. I was a wedding DJ, like pathetic, you know, just playing the CDs all night and that sort of thing. And so I used to try and throw in a little bit of hip hop every now and then because I loved it so much, not just because the other people were there. And one night, I forget what it was that I put on, but it had a massive F-word swearing in it at this fucking wedding. And I was like, shit, that's the last time I'm going to play like Snoop Dogg or whoever it was at a wedding. Just think twice next time, Chris. So. I also had it in the office with the kids when played in the office and people's kids come in and all of a sudden, you know, I don't know what's going on, but someone's got 99 problems and a bitch ate one or whatever.
Did you have an outfit for it when you were DJing?
Oh, I had to wear a suit and tie for the outfit. I had these great dreams of, you know, going and DJing at weddings, and you see it in the movies and stuff where, you know, someone steals a bridesmaid from the bridal party and they fall in love and you hook up with the brides. It never ever happened. I was useless. I just stood there behind my desk doing my Tassie two-step dancing. And then when I met Mel, who's now my wife, all of that ended. My wedding DJ career was over.
Yeah, right. You didn't meet her at a wedding, clearly.
No. We met at an IT training course. Very romantic.
It's cute.
But mate, it's a big year for you coming up. You've got this whole new brew system going in. Mm. In terms of the pub itself, do you need to make changes to that, or is that all pretty schmick right now? It's just a matter of just pumping more beer through there?
We're making small, like we're in the process of renovating the bathrooms at the moment. We're always doing little bits and pieces to make the venue better, for a better experience for everyone who comes. So, yeah, no, there's always upgrades, bathrooms, and then we're going to probably replace all the beer lines and put new fobs in and stuff like that. Just chip away at it essentially because it is a 150-year-old pub and, yeah, just slowly
it's
make
gonna
it
have some upkeep most of the time, hasn't it?
Oh, always. Yeah, there's always someone. And if you've ever had employees, they're always breaking things too. So it's endless. Anyway.
Fair enough. Well, we're gonna put some links in the show notes to tell everybody how they can find out about you. Also, in terms of trying to get your beer, if they're not in Milton, how can people from outside the area get hold of your beer?
We're in a lot of bottle shops from Loftus down to Naruma, and we're picking up a few places in Canberra at the moment. We're also in the process of applying for our online license, so we're about to do a lot of ship beer as well, and you'll be able to purchase that at DanielSales.com.
That's when it's all going to begin. You'll become this hype brewery before you know it.
Yeah. Well, who knows?
There you go.
Yeah. Cheers.
I have had the Australian IPA and the XPA this week. in and amongst dark mofo beers at the weekend. So from what I remember, they were great. I promise you. So it was great. Thanks for sending those down, mate.
No worries.
Really looking forward to the – what was the Uncle Damo's that you sent down? Was that
I can't remember what I sent you. Definitely sent you Imperial. So the Double Oats, which is what I sent you, is an Imperial version of our oatmeal stout. So it's a 9% nitro stout. Did I send you Cappuccino stout? I'm not sure.
What was the – is one called Uncle Damo's?
Yeah, that's the Imperial. So we do an Uncle Damo's Oaths. So it's like a piss take on the Oaths part of surfing and then on Damo. And then we did a double Uncle Damo's Oaths, which is a double Imperial version of our oatmeal stout.
Beautiful. I better go and check the fridge. But
I don't even remember. So,
as I said, the ones that I have had of yours have been sensational, and I've got tasty notes from every single beer from Liam to go back and go through. No, not really. I'm sure if I asked him for them, he'd give them to me.
But he would definitely.
No doubt. So. Well, mate, thanks very much for your time tonight. It's been absolutely fantastic. Big shout out for Liam for putting you onto me. I'm so glad he did because I feel like you have got a fantastic story to tell. You've been doing some great stuff so far, and it feels like you've only just scratched the surface of where you're going with this thing. So it's just awesome, mate. Congratulations.
Thank you. Too kind. And, hopefully everyone gets to try our beer soon.
Sensational. Leave the links in the show notes. Cheers to great beers.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you have an interesting beer story and want to be a guest on the Beer Healer interviews, send me a message via my Facebook page. And once again, if you want to help out the show, a simple rate and review on Apple Podcasts or a follow, like, or share on any other podcast service will do the trick. I'll catch you soon.